Well, good afternoon to you and welcome to Women's Focus. I'm Carol Boss. I'm calling today's program a show of journeys. I noticed the idea of journeys running through the three segments we have this afternoon. It certainly wasn't intentional, but present nonetheless. Right now, I have the great pleasure to introduce you to my first guest. Love is a Verb is a documentary that examines a social movement of Sufi-inspired Muslims that first began in Turkey in the 1960s, and it now reaches around the globe, and it's going to be screened this next week, one showing only, Thursday, February 25th at 6:30 p.m. at the Regal Winrock Stadium Theater in Winrock Center here in Albuquerque, and I'm going to give more details in a little while about getting tickets. Terry Spencer Hesser is the writer, director, and producer of the film. She's been telling stories in print, on television, and on the stage for three decades. She's the recipient of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Gold Award, three Emmys, and a host of other honors. So Terry joins us today from her home in Chicago. Welcome, Terry Spencer Hesser.
Thank you, Carol. My pleasure to be here.
I'm really, really glad that we're going to have the opportunity to talk. Now, from what I've read about you, and some of this is old, but you have Search for Vampires in Transylvania, Limburger Cheese in Wisconsin, The Meaning of a Black Canvas at the Art Institute of Chicago in your hometown, and you have written a play about Elvis, and that's just a few of the many subjects that have caught your imaginations. So I know I love my own curiosity, and I love it in others, and I'm wondering, what are the roots of your active curiosity and imagination?
You know, that's no one's ever actually asked me that question. What are the roots of it? I don't know. I think I grew up in what I like to refer to as the second most politically incorrect neighborhood in America after Selma, Alabama. We basically welcomed Martin Luther King and threatened to murder, I'm sorry, we welcomed Al Capone and threatened to murder Martin Luther King. So there were so many stories by so many different people growing up, and everybody was so fascinating in their own extremely quirky way that I think it was a fertile place to grow up for somebody who's imaginative.
So when can I assume that the writing came before the actual getting involved with filmmaking?
I was a writer first, that's right. And I wrote plays and actually screenplays. The only movie that you could really see of mine is on the Hallmark Channel. It's called Smooch. It's a Valentine's movie. The other movies sort of fell in and out of development so far. But I've written books, and in fact, you mentioned Bennington College. My book, Kissing Doorknobs, was edited by the fabulous Lawrence David, who went to Bennington College.
Oh, neat. So what's the story leading up to your making of the film Love is a Verb?
Well, I do a series on PBS called Islands Without Cars. So I'm fortunate enough to go to Islands Without Cars and tell the stories on film of the people who make the islands work. So it's not so much a travelogue as it is a little sociological almost look and Valentine to each place. And so through my downstairs neighbor, I ended up meeting people in the Hizmet movement, and they offered to take me to Turkey. And I was thinking, I know there's an island without cars off of Istanbul, and I thought, wow, Turkey's amazing. This would be a great travel show. And it was really sort of in the middle of that first interfaith trip to Turkey. Now, it was an interfaith trip, so it sounds like a setup for a joke. A couple of Muslims, a couple of Jews, and a couple of Christians get on a bus. And essentially, we traveled through Turkey, and I listened as they talked about their faith. And then I realized that this was sponsored by a movement, and I'd stumbled onto a much bigger story than the one that I'd originally gone there to look at.
I know that you're probably always looking for new stories for film, and so this sounds like one of those surprises sometimes as to what may suddenly present itself as a really great story that you didn't expect.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to say, in a lot of ways, these last, I guess, 6 years now has really changed my life and the way that I look at things. Because before I started this program and what the program is about is we followed the people who follow the influence of Fethullah Gulen, this Turkish imam who is now living in Pennsylvania. And so basically my introduction to Islam is through this very unique aspect of Islam. Mr. Gulen believes in capitalism, so that you take care of others, you turn around and help the needy, democracy, and he's Sufi inspired, which I also didn't realize, that other Muslims do not basically even consider necessarily Islamic. So anyway, the whole thing, I spent the first year reading books, and then we really started filming, and we ended up filming in 6 countries and telling the stories of these people who really risk their lives for their beliefs.
Yeah, and some of those places... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, which is challenging for all of us. I mean, one of the things I thought of is they're risking their lives for their beliefs. Would I do it? And I think that, you know, it shows in the film. I mean, I think people who have responded to the film and who have seen it have all asked themselves that question. Would I do it?
I didn't know the travels were such they weren't necessarily the safest places to travel in, which we'll talk about. What really was the key point in where you decided I need to make a film?
I Need to Make a Film came really, really early on. And it was very interesting because early on, the subject that came up again and again was headscarves. And as an American, that means nothing to me. I mean, it's like a choice of, you know, and as a secular American, it means nothing to me. That's like, do you want to have bangs or do not want to have bangs? And I didn't realize the intense scrutiny and the loaded issue behind something as simple as women wearing headscarves, or choosing to or not choosing to, or being forced into it or not, or being perceived as one way if you do and another way if you don't. So, well, anyway, as it turns out, we did not deal with that issue in this film, and that's one of the issues that I'm hoping to deal with in the next one. But the early on was just meeting people who sort of challenged my assumptions about life and set of values. So I wanted to get to know them. And they were certainly welcoming.
So this is a huge topic that you wanted to cover. Did you have a particular goal or intent in mind? And then that may very well have changed along the way as you met more people and traveled.
I wouldn't say that this was a goal. But one of the things that I realized initially was, you know, America is so, there's so much tension going on here now, and spirituality is so fraught with peril, if you will. And I thought, you know, America is having a spirituality problem, and Muslims definitely have a public relations problem, that I thought it would be interesting to put a different face on a religion that we only tend to see in a negative way on the news.
So let's talk about some of the stories that you discovered or people told you about that you wound up filming. You might need to say, or I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about Hizmet. I don't think you mentioned that word in Turkish means service.
Right.
And
there's a funny story there. I didn't realize it meant service for months. And we, you know, every house we went to, I kept picking up envelopes that, you know, people would leave their mail on the table. And it was like, wow, Hizmet must be huge because all of these people have something in the mail from Hizmet. But I didn't realize it was telephone service.
That is funny. So you want to talk just a little bit about what that means in terms of Hizmet itself, and which also goes by the name of Gula, right? Gulen.
Yeah, they call it the Gulen movement after Fethullah Gulen, and we're both pronouncing that so horribly. It's so hard to pronounce Turkish. They don't. I think Mr. Gulen himself discourages it being called the Gulen movement. He'd prefer to see it as service, as sort of a reminder of what people do. And also, he seems to be, for a leader of this amazing international group of followers, he's not like this charismatic leader like you would think. He's a very private, very quiet, pretty shy person. So when I first heard that he didn't want it named after him, I thought, why not? And then when I met him, I thought, I sort of get it.
Well, the stories that you're going to share with us all really have to do with service, and we'll talk about, and folks will understand, I think, soon why you named the film Love is a Verb. If you just joined us, this is Women's Focus. My name is Carol Boss, and my first guest this afternoon is Terry Spencer Hesser. She's the writer, director, and producer of the documentary Love is a Verb. It is going to be screening in Albuquerque this coming Thursday night, the 25th at 6:30 p.m. at the Regal Winrock Stadium 16, that's a mouthful, theater in Albuquerque. And I will tell you how to get tickets. You have to do that in advance online. So where did you start with this journey that you took?
We started filming in the United States a little. We did this really in fits and starts as we were raising money. And we started by filming schools in the United States. And, you know, once you start researching, you know, schools affiliated with the movement, just Googling it, you immediately come up with people who don't like the schools or who feel threatened by the schools or who don't, you know, are afraid that the schools are really madrasas or some sort of brainwashing Islamic, you know, training camps for their children. So the information out there is pretty shocking and pretty inaccurate. So we started by filming the schools here, and then we filmed a little bit in Turkey. We met a lot of the professors that we interviewed about the movement. Since it's Turkish, they are in Turkey, so we filmed a lot in Turkey. And it was in Turkey that I also found a group of people who really hated the movement, and it just happened by accident. It was our last day of shooting, and we went to this Greek restaurant next door to the place where the Hizmet, the sorbet, took place. And a man came up to our table, and he said, they let you in there? You went in there with them? And I was so confused. I said, yeah. They let you in there with a skirt? And I was thinking, I said, okay, obviously you saw me, so why are you asking me something that you already know? So the answer is yes. And I said something like, do you have a problem? He said, yes, I hate them. And I said, well, you know, sit down. Why do you hate them? And he said, I love Ataturk. And terribly, my bad, flippantly, I said, well, Ataturk is dead, and I think there's room for new thought here. Well, he flew off the handle, and somebody else came up to the table and said, did you just compare Fethullah Gulen to Ataturk? I said, I did not. I mean, maybe I said something not so good, but not that. And so it was. They did end up coming back and talking to us a little bit, but it was my first inkling of how heated it is in Turkey in terms of you like the movement or you don't like the movement. They're as divided there as we are at this point with, I don't know, Republicans and Democrats feels too simplistic to say, but something like that.
So I know I haven't read any of full excerpts of the stories of some of the people that you filmed, but I did read enough to know that these acts of service, these acts of love, are really, some of them are quite extraordinary, some of them are quite dangerous, and I was wondering if you could share with us at least one of them. I also want to mention that Time magazine in 2013 named Fethullah, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, I hope, Gulen, as one of the most influential leaders in the world, preaching a message of tolerance. So talk about some of these people. And really, these acts are really what the film is all about. Love is a verb.
Well, the film is really a series of profiles.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in Bosnia, we interviewed these two men who basically snuck into the war. When the war was going on in Bosnia and everybody was trying to get out of the country, here are these two guys, fresh out of college, with hardly any money in their pocket, going there to serve the people of Bosnia and teaching them not to retaliate, not to hate. So they're sneaking into a war zone, risking their own lives, and basically going every week to the government to ask for space to open a school. And they thought, the Bosnians thought, are they crazy? We need food. We need water. Bombs are dropping. They want to teach us math. But it wasn't just about the math. It was teaching them that that they're basically brothers and sisters, that there's no reason to be killing each other over religion or ethnicity. And so I ended up interviewing a guy who's now in his 30s, who was a child at the time, who also works for peace, and said, I would have never been talking this way if I hadn't gone to their schools. I would have been another person. And bizarrely, on that same trip, I met another person who really sardonically informed me, we didn't all go to the Turkish schools, and we don't all love each other. And he was waiting for another war, so he just lived in this really dark place. So that's one story. Another one is the teachers, who these Turkish teachers who go to Iraq again during a war to keep the schools open and protect the kids, and develop these intense relationships with these kids. And the thing that hit me the most there is the notion of modeling. The teacher said, I'm always thinking of how they see me because I'm their model. If I do this, they're going to think it's okay. So I really need to adhere to the highest moral standards to be a good role model. And that was my first inkling of what I want to do with the next film, because I think that's critical. And then Iraq was tough. I mean, really nothing horrible happened to us. Everything could have. So I was frankly scared, and I didn't particularly want to go, but I was in too deep by then. But then when we were in Iraq, our schedule changed, and my executive producer said, well, next we're going to Somalia. I said, well, I'm not going to Somalia. He said, no, we are, because these doctors are now going into a country without a government, where my government, the U.S., says, don't go there, we can't protect you. I'm not going. So as it turns out, I didn't go. The cameraman went with him and the audio guy, and he later said, I'm so glad you didn't go for the conditions that we stayed in. But the segment that they shot and that I then edited and told the story ends our film, and it's amazingly dramatic. I mean, these doctors, this Turkish doctor, this woman, she's got two little kids at home. And I said, what are you, and I interviewed them all in Turkey. I said, why are you risking your life like this? It's not like you don't do good in Turkey. And she said, because we go where we're needed. And, you know, it was a little bit of magical thinking that her kids would be protected. But more than that, it really was this altruistic sense of, this is what needs to be done, and I can do it, so I will do it.
Well, certainly it's serving humanity, but and part of it is, isn't it, to, in the sense, I don't know if I'll say this correctly, but for the sake of God or to please God.
Yeah, the idea is that they live their lives in a way that would be pleasing to God.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have a certain level of faith that in my Western American fallen Catholic worldview, I think I'll never understand. I met a woman who married someone, I mean, she was in Turkey, he was here getting his PhD, it was sort of an arrangement between the families, and, you know, she lives in Chicago, she's happy, she's got two kids, but when I first asked her the question, I said, wait a minute, you came all the way to America by yourself to marry someone you didn't know? What were you thinking? And she said, I was thinking that everything would be all right, and I had faith, and if things turned out to not be all right, I'd be patient. And I thought, wow, those are two things that are so beyond me. And then I ended up getting to know her better, and I hope she'll be in my next film because she's fascinating.
Yeah. We often, really often, hear about Muslims in a negative light, and here you are telling these amazing stories of Muslims who are in service to humanity in different spots in the world. And right now, Fethullah Gulen is in this country. He essentially exiled himself to this country. Is that right?
Right, right.
And from the reading that I have done, which is certainly not extensive, I get the impression that, and he was named Time, you know, he was honored by Time magazine, as I mentioned before, for his humanitarian work and his work for tolerance in the world. And yet there seems to be suspicions about the movement. There's a movement here, he's here, and I'm getting the feeling that he's still carefully watched. Because they want to know if there's something, my impression from what I read is, you know, that the acts of service can actually be a cover for something more sinister.
That's exactly the position of the opposition. And I don't know the opposition particularly. I didn't interview them for their take on this, although it's pretty much everywhere. It's not a surprise. But I think as the movement gets more and more, as there's more and more members, as they're in more and more countries, and they're therefore more and more powerful, the existing ruling parties in Turkey see them as a threat, you know, because it's like any other movement. So they're accused of, you know, they only hire their own, they only hang out with their own, they're exclusive, they're this. I don't know the movement well enough to answer all of those criticisms. All I can say is I, as a foreigner, as a stranger, and as a woman, was not only welcomed, but really there was never an unsafe moment. There was never an inappropriate anything. They really do hold themselves to an incredibly high moral standard. Now, as a funny story, an aside here, is we were in Iraq for weeks, and it was a hellhole. It's under construction, so it's construction, sand, and heat. So about the second week there, I finally go down to the bar and say, I know you don't have any alcohol at this bar, but surely someone in this town does. So I end up going into the Christian section, into this liquor store, the dustiest bottles, obviously nobody's buying this, and I ended up buying the dustiest bottle of wine I ever bought. And the owner said to me, do you mind if I ask your nationality? Now, he was not a member of Hizmet. He just lived in Iraq. And I said, I'm American. He said, no, before that. I said, well, what do you think? And he said, I think you're Irish. And I said, do you think I'm Irish because I'm buying alcohol? He said, yes. I said, well, you see, sometimes racial profiling does work. I am half Irish. So the experiences were extraordinary. I mean, in Iraq, people came out of nowhere to come up and say to me, are you American or are you Canadian? That seemed to be the only two. And I said, I'm American. And then they would say, thank you. And at first I was taken aback. Thank you? Thank you for getting rid of Saddam. Oh, huh. Okay.
Did you say you're welcome?
I said you're welcome, and it wasn't really my choice.
Right. Can you tell us very briefly what you won your Emmys for?
Various. Years ago people said, oh, you should really pick. You should do one thing. And I thought, well, if I did one thing, I might as well have a staff job in a bank. So I've been lucky enough to go from one extremely different project to another. So one of my Emmys is for being a producer on an Artbeat series, a series about programs about art. Another one is for specifically a one-hour special on the Art Institute of Chicago, where we, you know, basically told a little bit about every curatorial department, and it was really fun to do and amazing. And the other one is for Robert McCormick was this, you know, sort of czar of Chicago who published the Chicago Tribune for 40 years. And so it was sort of a profile, a biography of him, the Tribune, and then that's a lot of Chicago history.
So it sounds like there have been times throughout the making of this film, Love is a Verb, that there's been, you know, some issues of getting enough financing for it. And if that's the case, does winning 3 Emmys help out with finding funding?
I don't know whether they help directly. I suppose they help indirectly, but because, you know, especially we even did crowdsourcing online, and to have people, you know, trust you enough to make a film is really, there's so many ways that people do not finish films. I was surprised when I talked to funders and they said that they had funded so many programs that didn't actually get finished. And it surprised me, but then I thought, well, there's so many pitfalls. There's so many places that you could actually, that people could be derailed. So I think they, that the Emmys, you know, give a certain cachet to, you know, what you're doing, but also you kind of have to have the stick-to-itiveness of a pit bull.
Mm-hmm. And if you just joined us, I just mentioned I'm talking to Terry, and again, let me just tell you very briefly that her film, Love is a Verb, is essentially an examination of the social movement of Sufi-inspired Sunni Muslims that began in Turkey in the 1960s and now is really across the globe. And it's called Hizmet, if you've got tuned in to hear us mention that word, which means service. And that's what all of these people that Terry has been talking about and who has filmed are doing in various spots in the world. Some very risky, some of them are very risky places to be in right now, and what they're doing is very, very risky. So this has been, you heard me do the introduction to this show, and I realized when I was thinking about the show that really every segment that I'm doing, that we're doing on the show, there are three of them this afternoon, have in some way got to do with journeys. And yours was certainly a journey in creating this film, but it, from what I've read, I don't know exactly how it's impacted you, but you said it's changed your life. That's what I read, and I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that. How has it changed your life?
I guess I really think about things now that I didn't particularly think about before, like what are the key values that I want my life or work to display, and what do those values require of me, and what's my plan for doing these things, and what's the through line in my work? And it's not like I'm really trying to answer questions or proselytize. I'm really trying to just explore and explain to the public people or places that I find fascinating.
And it also sounds like it's going to impact some of the work that you do in the future.
I sure hope so.
And you got to interview, you said, Fethullah Gulen, and you want to talk a little bit more what that experience was like?
In meeting with him, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did get the interview. I mean, I think it was Leslie Stahl who basically never got in. They kept her, he never gave granted the interview. And so I forgot what show she's on. I think it's 60 Minutes.
So, so didn't get the big-time TV show, didn't get an interview?
Yeah, so we showed up, and we got there, and basically they said he wasn't feeling good, and I thought, oh, my God, this is going to be 60 Minutes Part 2. And we waited and waited, and, you know, he wasn't feeling good, and his doctor was there. But we did get the interview, and I have to say I don't think he was very comfortable with me. For one thing, we had a translator. I don't speak Turkish. He doesn't speak. Well, I think he understands some English, but he doesn't speak it. And so, you know, the translator is awkward enough. You know, a lot of people in the room, because there were a lot of his students and people sort of coming and going. So normally I like a much more controlled atmosphere, but clearly I was not in charge there. And so we just sort of went with it, and I have to say he was very soft-spoken, very shy. I took it as a point of personal pride that at the end I said something that made him laugh, and he relaxed, but it was sort of late. We were kind of done with the interview by then. But he's a very serious, very pious person. And then we asked if we could, he was going to address his students, and it was prayer time. We asked if we could film that. And he said yes,